Right, well, after Human Touch, you've got the Lucky Town sessions, and it was amazing how all this, I mean, you've got...
Well, that was all, that was all mixed together, you know, because what happened is I was trying to write one last song for Human Touch. It ended up being Living Proof, but it sounded completely different to me. And so I said, well, and then all of a sudden, in about a week or 2 weeks at most, I wrote all those other songs.
But within that two-week period?
Yeah, I think what happened is on Human Touch, we had a very sort of controlled recording process, and it was something where we went back to doing it. And it was just very much a studio record. And by the end of it, I was unsure, you know, I was unsure about some of it. And so I think the Lucky Town record, in a funny way, was partly it was a reaction to having spent all that time in the studio. I went over in my house, I just set the stuff up, I grabbed my acoustic guitar, and I just started to play the songs. And so that was a record that developed, you know, in the month literally after I finished the Human Touch record, you know. And so we ended up sitting there with two records.
Hello, welcome to Rock and or Roll / Getting Bossy. This is what? So the last one was that our third? Have we only done two?
We've done two.
Yeah. So this is episode 4 of Getting Bossy, but it's coming out on the same day as episode 3.
Because we're clever like that.
This episode's called Lucky Touch.
And best album title ever.
And I'm joined by Brian Sword from the Double Stop. Hey, Brian.
Hey, how's it going, buddy? It's been a long time, no talk.
Yeah, and so Lucky Touch, we're going to talk about Lucky Town, the second episode that Bruce released in March of 1992 on the same day. Where's the date? I forget. It was March 13th or something like that.
31st.
March 31st. I transposed the numbers? Is that what that's called?
Yeah. Dyslexic?
Yeah, I was dyslexic there for a second.
I think essentially these episodes really do fit like the records, where Human Touch was recorded first and then, you know, Lucky Town. So this is the second episode. This is the equivalent to Lucky Town, where you probably should listen to the first episode first. But if you want to be a rebel, you can listen to this one first, too.
Yeah, we spent a lot more time on the first one than we're going to spend on the second one.
Exactly. More intro. This one's probably going to be a little shorter, but I think essentially what it comes down to is that he spent a year at least working on Human Touch, and it was a bit of a grind for him. He wrote a crap ton of songs and worked with a bunch of studio guys, didn't have the E Street Band, and then went back into the studio to record Living Proof because he thought he needed one more song, and had a burst of creativity, which had, you know, he hadn't had in a while, and cranked out 10 songs and decided, you know what, I'm just going to make a separate album. I'm going to pull the Guns N' Roses trick and release them both on the same day.
Yeah. Yeah, Human Touch. And also, I think a big factor was he just wasn't satisfied with Human Touch. He says he wanted to write one more song, but that all just stemmed from the fact that he didn't feel like Human Touch was good enough. It was finished. He wasn't satisfied with it. He still thought it needed something else. So he's trying to write another song.
Yeah.
And then he has this creative burst. And I mean, I think the story goes that he wrote and recorded Lucky Town in 3 weeks.
Which I believe.
Yeah.
I believe it. And to me, this record sounds much more... it doesn't sound like traditional Bruce, E Street, but it definitely sounds more traditional Bruce than Human Touch.
Yeah, I would agree. And it feels more inspired.
It does. And more personal.
Yeah.
There's definitely some more personal songs on this one.
And he really did. It is weird. This... Lucky Town is a manifestation of like a creative burst. It's pretty interesting when you look at this, when you think he wrote and recorded all these songs in 3 weeks, and he really did just, it's like he wrote Living Proof, and it just like, I don't know, it just started him rolling, and then he was just on his way after that. And wrote some really strong songs really fast. So it's pretty interesting that you have this album as, and you know the story and you can see, wow, you know, it does happen. I mean, I guess every creative person has probably experienced it. And that, you know, I think that's a lot of times that's what makes great albums great, is just something happens at that point for that artist or that band where they just keep writing the songs one after another and they all kind of feed into each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, and it just becomes something special. Well, like we said, it could have been much more special with the East Street Band.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. We've already run through that, but you know, people talk about albums, artists talk about albums as, you know, it's a moment in time where perhaps they had that burst. And I think that's generally how Bruce works, because he's always got a million songs. You know, I think he even on an album that he labored over, like Darkness, it wasn't a shortage of songs. It wasn't that he was in the studio not knowing what to do. He just kept on cranking them out and then couldn't make up his mind at the end what should be on the album. So the Human Touch experience, I think that's an anomaly for him to have. He wrote a bunch of songs even though he still had, you know, 25, 30 songs. So even that, I don't know, maybe that's not even right. He just struggling in just recording them into a way he liked, or did he just feel he'd written a bunch of bad songs? I don't know.
Well, I think this is probably this, you know, I bet you if the guys in the East Street Band heard this story, all right, he's got 25 songs, he records them, he's not happy with it, he writes another one, he records 10 more. I bet that's what happened every album. It's just he didn't release all of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
So the E Street guys would probably be like, well, yeah, of course that's what he did. That's what he always did.
Have you met Bruce?
But the difference was in the past, he would have taken the Human Touch songs and the Lucky Town songs and he would have made one album out of them. Or maybe he would have made one album out of them, scrapped that, and then released a double album a year later, like The River. But this was a familiar thing for Bruce Springsteen to have too many songs and not know what the album was going to be. But he always put a lot of thought into it and ended up coming up with or putting out the album that he was happy with. And I think what happened here is he ended up releasing, not being 100%, you know, behind what he released, but releasing it anyways. I think that might be part of the problem.
Yeah, and I don't know if that was a record label thing or what, but you do hear him when he talks about it. I think he does have a bit of regret about these albums.
Yeah.
Now, Human Touch, I will say, horrific font aside, I think it's a kick-ass album cover of the close-up of his guitar kind of around his waist. As opposed to the Lucky Town one, which looks like, you know, it just like grab a camera and take a shot against the wall. This one actually looks like they tried.
Yeah.
You know, and the back one too, him holding the guitar in a different position, you know, focusing more on the headstock. Cool. I think he gets a pass from me on the actual photography, unlike The River, but the font is still unforgivable. I don't know what the hell they were thinking.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, the fonts are always, except for Born to Run, the fonts are, well, Darkness, what he just uses typewriter.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Like, at least that's, you know, a level of creativity.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's definitely, I don't think he's batting 500 over font choices on his album covers, that's for sure.
No, especially with recent stuff, too. Yeah.
Questionable.
Yeah. But, yeah, so the story of Lucky Town, I guess we've already probably covered it, but he wrote Living Proof, that turned into writing the whole 10 songs and recording it, and Living Proof was originally going to be written for Human Touch, but it turns into a whole other album.
Yeah.
And, you know, like what we're doing today, probably the right thing for him to do would have been to look at all these songs he has then after the Lucky Town burst and still just put together one album. Because, as we know, Bruce Springsteen was never averse to not releasing songs.
Exactly. So, and they feel similar in terms of production.
Yeah.
And musicians at all. So they really do blend together just fine. Just because he wrote these songs together in a burst doesn't mean that they should be, you know, released together like this.
There's no way it was the first time that while he was working on an album, he wrote a bunch of more songs. He did it all the time. So
exactly.
I don't think it was unusual.
Yeah.
I think it's just unusual the way they were released. But the way they were written and the way they, you know, the process of writing and recording the songs was probably just the way Bruce always did it, was just have too many songs, not know what to do. It's kind of, and then he figures it out. But I don't think he quite figured it out in this instance, is really what's different, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So if you didn't listen to the first episode, what we're going to do is, now it's my turn. I'm going to go through the 24 songs and pull out a maximum of 12 to make my own version of what a single release should have been, and what I think would have, you know, been much more accepted by the fans.
All right.
So, I'm going to jump
right
into it.
This album is called Lucky Touch.
Every time you say it, I can't help but laugh. The thought of Bruce Springsteen releasing an album called Lucky Touch is just genius.
Yeah, that's what's funny, is they both really work as album titles. Humans Out and Lucky Touch, they totally work. So,
you know what? You could even have the same album cover. Him, like, because he's got a close-up of his hand touching his guitar.
Yeah.
And call it Lucky Touch. It works.
Just switch the album covers.
Yeah, it just works.
The Lucky Town, yeah, Human Town, yeah.
Go. Okay, so I did the same thing you did. I went through and I made a list of, like, okay, what are the songs I think must be on here? And what are the, you know, the ones that I, you know, are great? And then what's the rest? Okay, so I didn't come up with a full batch of must be on here. I'm going to pull up my list here. I have five songs must be on. So my five songs that are going to be peppered in here are Human Touch, Better Days, Lucky Town, Local Hero, and If I Should Fall Behind. Those, to me, got to be on.
All right, well, at least we agree on four of those five. Plus, I had Local Hero on my short list, but it wasn't on my for-sure list.
That's the one song I was shocked you didn't have on, because it's such a classic Bruce. It's totally autobiographical. I do admit that I like the lyrics a bit more than the melody, but it's still very, very Bruce, and I think it must be on this collection.
I tell you, my main problem is probably the way he sings it, with, like, the accent thing that he's doing.
That I'm living in California, I don't know who I am anymore accident.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and just like you, I did side A, side B, vinyl, cassette, whatever. You know, I didn't do the just 10-song CD thing. But I actually have 11 songs. And I have one song at the end that gets an honorable mention that I didn't feel fit on the album but would make a good B-side. So I accept I kind of cheated there.
No, so, that's very Bruce, though.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So song number one for me is Soul Driver. Now, I liked the thing you didn't like about the song. I liked the intro. I just thought that'd be an interesting way to start off an album. I passionately hate the cheesy keyboards on it, and I don't understand why in the early 90s he had such a cheesy sounding keyboard, when even the keyboards on, like, Born in the USA did not sound cheesy like this. They still hold up, but there's this little cheesy keyboard melody dancing along the top that just should have been removed. And I'm not necessarily a huge fan of the background vocals that's happening in the song, but if it was Little Stevie singing them, I would absolutely love them. So that goes back to the argument of, if this song was done by the E Street Band, I think it would have been a monster, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
But I still think it has merit and it belongs on the album, and I think it's a good way to start this.
Now, would you describe that song as bluesy, or is it more like swampy, or what? It's something like that, right?
Yeah, but it still rocks.
Yeah. So no, I like it. I think it sets a good tone. Obviously, like we've said over and over, if it was, you know, produced better, recorded better, it would be even cooler. But yeah, it's a cool song.
Yeah. Next song is Better Days. I just think it's an awesome song. And, you know, if, you know, that quote that Bruce said that people didn't want to hear him write happy songs, for the most part, I agree, but if he's going to do it, this is the way to do it, because I think it's a great song.
Yeah.
Third song, Local Hero, which I still can't believe you didn't put on your collection, crazy bastard. I guess it's just an awesome autobiographical song. And again, you know, yes, fine. The lyrics are better than the melody, but it definitely belongs in this collection to me. Fourth song is If I Should Fall Behind. I think after three kind of up-tempo songs, it's time to kind of bring it down. I think it's really awesome. It's really interesting. Like, this is a song that he played on the reunion tour, which further showed you how good some of this material could have been with the E Street Band. You know, it's on the Live from New York album. So I get frustrated again when I hear how good this song could be when done properly.
Right.
But at the same time, the song is a song. It's a great song.
Yeah.
So it deserves to be here for sure. Now, I think my next song is one of the songs you hated. I put Gloria's Eyes on the end. I want to have a nice, good rocking song with lots of guitar, which this song probably has the most guitar playing of any of the on the two records. So I want to end side one with a bang. And it's, for me, I think it's the guitar work in this one is what sold me to put it on to finish the album, the side one.
Yeah, I really don't like that song. That reminds me of when we talked about The Wild, The Innocent, when you and Lee talked a lot about the guitar work on Kitty's Back, and that's my least favorite song on there, just because as a song, I don't like it. Yeah. Gloria's Eyes has a vibe that I just don't like at all. It's the kind of song I don't like, so yeah. But yeah, otherwise, what, all the other songs you've said so far were on mine too. Well, not
Except
Local Hero.
Local Hero.
Well,
yeah,
I have to say, if I had done a 12 song album, like I thought about, Cross My Heart and Local Hero would have been the other ones on there. But
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we were in line on three.
Yeah.
And then two weren't.
Yeah.
Okay. So side two, I opened it exactly the same as you did. I opened it with Lucky Town.
Yeah, that's like the first song on side two. That really works, yeah.
Yeah, it really works. Love the guitar tone in the opening. You know, when you talk about some tones, I think the guitar tone at the intro to the song is great. Really, really, really miss Max on this one. I think the drumming is really generic.
Yeah.
Max would have just brought it up a notch. But the chorus is great, and it's just a great opener for side two.
Yeah, if you think about it, if Lucky Town was recorded with the E Street Band, that would be considered like a classic blues song, I think.
Absolutely. I agree totally. Yeah. Yep. Song number seven, second song on side two for me is Human Touch. Obviously, it's going to be on this album. Awesome song. It was a single. It deserved to be. I think it would have been better with the E Street, but you can say that about all the songs. This is the one song where the bass playing, I think, really, really works. I think there's some great bass playing in this song. It perhaps is a little too polished because it kind of reeks of Studio Guy in its polishness, but the playing, the bass lines in this song, I think, add a lot to the song. Okay, song number eight. I think this was possibly a song that you didn't like. I want to change it up completely in terms of vibe because we've got two kind of up songs. I went for the Big Muddy. It really sounds to me like a Steve Earle song or something that could have been on Tunnel of Love. I find it sounds like nothing else of this collection of songs. There's no song like this. I think it's a nice change of pace, so I plopped it in kind of the middle of side two.
That's probably one of my least favorite of all the songs.
There you go.
Yeah.
And then song number nine is your least favorite song, 57 Channels and Nothing.
Perfect.
Now, I'll tell you why I put this song on. Okay. Do I love this song now? Nope, not at all. I don't like that. Do I like it? Yeah, maybe a little. Do I love it? Absolutely not. But when this video came out, I was 20, and it was on heavy rotation on Much Music here in Canada. And when I was 20, I loved this song. I thought this song was awesome. So this song is on there for my 20-year-old version of myself because if I loved it so much then, there's got to be some kind of value to the song. So I'm gonna slot it in at the end, nearing the end of the album, but I'm going to slot it in because there's got to be a value to it if I liked it so much once.
I don't even think it's a song based on the criteria of what a song is.
Well, a musical experiment.
Yeah.
Him jamming on a bass because it is him playing bass on it. But yeah, for whatever reason, when this song came out, I thought it was awesome. So when I went through it now, I'm like, I don't. But if I liked it then, there's going to be some merit to it. And not every song on here has to be a winner. It has to be a good collection. And it, again, I thought it also went well with the Big Muddy as just kind of a two-song kind of detour of a bit of a weird pacing tonally. For then for me to come back with another song you hate, All or Nothing at All. I'm putting it on towards the end. Is this a great song? No. But every time it comes on, I end up singing along with the chorus. Every freaking time I put the record on, because I'm not going to skip it like a CD, when it comes to the chorus, I always start singing along with it. So that's got to mean something. There's, you know, so in terms of, does it have a value? Yes, because I can't help myself but sing along to it. So I'm plopping it in. I wanted a rocker to finish up after two mid-tempo songs. And then I wanted to end it on song 11. I went with an 11-song record here. Ended it with Pony Boy. I thought that was, it's a traditional song. Bruce didn't write it.
Yeah.
It just seemed like a very Bruce thing to do, to end off on a little acoustic folk song. So those are my 11 songs.
And what, maybe, like three or four of them I talked shit about in the last episode, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah. I think probably on the obvious stuff, even though I still think Local Hero, I don't understand why you didn't put that on. But the other ones are the obvious songs that we agreed on. And then it was on the non-obvious, more the deeper cuts on the record where we, you know, like I ended my last four songs. I know those aren't the best songs. But Pony Boy, I think, works as an album. A lot of what I was thinking was what works as an album or songs that first, there's something about it that I know I like. Either I sing along with it or I liked it when I was a kid. Well, 20. But I'm choosing songs that I think have value. And I think these 11, to me, have the most value of the collection to, you know, stand the test of time, is what you're trying to do when you release an album.
Yeah, well, you know, If I'm being honest, my album I just made were my favorite songs. But if Bruce was gonna be turning these songs into an album, obviously he was gonna put 57 Channels on there for sure, you know. Whatever album he made out of those songs, that song would have been on there. So well, mine isn't realistic.
Yeah. He felt strong enough to make a video.
Yeah.
But that's not, yeah. Well, that's what he felt has merit. I put on what I felt has merit.
Right.
And then my B-side is Beautiful Reward. I just felt, well, it's a really nice song. I think it's a little generic. But I also felt that I had side two, I've got two mid-tempo songs. Side one, I've got If I Should Fall Behind. There's no room for another slow song for me.
Yeah. I think the word generic is, you could apply that to too many of these songs. I think that's part of the problem. There's a lot of generic happening here.
Whether maybe he was trying just really hard to have a hit and tried too hard and went too generic. I don't know.
Some of it's generic in general and some of it's generic Bruce, you know, but you get both kinds of generic, but you get too much of that, which, I mean, I think that's just part of the big problem that people have is too much generic.
Yeah. But as we discussed in your side, I think if you would have released this record, I think the fans would have been much more accepting of it than what he did release. Yeah. And again, if you know, I look at The Big Muddy, if that's an E Street song, I think it'd kick ass.
Yeah, that's the whole thing is, but what you really have to envision is these records recorded with the E Street Band. I think that's what's missing more than anything from the whole project, obviously. I don't really know. Yeah, I don't know why he chose to do it the way he did it. I don't know. I mean, I guess he sort of did Tunnel of Love in a similar way to a certain extent.
And it's not like there was bad blood or anything, because
no.
you got the band back together just a couple years later for the greatest hits.
Yeah, it was 95, I think, when,
Yeah, it's a couple more years. And it's really funny because it seems like this epic, you know, long time without the E Street Band. But when you actually look at it, and the length of his career from 1970, say, just to start it off, there was what? From End of the Tunnel of Love tour would be 89, probably around there, to 99. That was the time that there was no E Street Band. And then right in the middle of it, we got a taste of, they got together, recorded a few songs, did a video, you know, so you got like a 5 year gap. You got 5 years, a little bit of E Street, then another 5 years out of the 40 years of his career. You know, it just seems like it wasn't, looking back on it at the time, it felt like forever, but looking back on it, it doesn't seem like not that long anyway. Considering how long they've been reunited, you know, since 99. Now you're talking coming up on 20 years that they've been reunited.
And another thing I was just thinking is, another way he could have approached this dearth of material or whatever that he had, which he always had, but is, you know, you put out one album in 91, 92, then you got all this other material that you can keep working on and work towards another album. Then you end up with Streets of Philadelphia. You put that on there. You get another Bruce album in 93, 94, you know, with some of these leftover songs, and Streets of Philadelphia could be on there, and, you know.
But you're talking about his whole career.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what we've talked about on the other episodes. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, like, this is a guy that could have easily been the guy that releases an album every 12 to 16 months, basically his whole life.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Of course, he likes to do the epic long tours, but still, if he's going to go record that many songs at a time, like The River, he could have split that up easily and done two records, one, in, you know, a year apart. This is a guy that's got 1,000 songs probably, you know, tucked under his bed. So that's not a problem.
How many songs did we overlap on? Probably half of them. So
I'd say about half. Like, I've got 11, and I could say you've got, I think, 3 and 4, 5. Because on side two, we've got Lucky Town and Human Touch. I think you had both of those, right?
Yeah.
Well, definitely Lucky Town. But you didn't have Big Muddy, 57 Channels, All or Nothing at All, or Pony Boy. So on side two,
did you have Living Proof on yours?
No.
No, yeah.
So we've got 5. So half of yours I chose, and just a little half of mine, because I had that one extra song.
Yeah, I think you're looking at, you got the two title tracks and Better Days and If I Should Fall Behind are just kind of the most obvious ones, probably.
Yeah.
And then we were just kind of like, that's, so the reason you were going, oh boy, is because my first two songs, you probably don't, do you like Leap of Faith, or is that another one that you don't really?
No, don't like it.
Yeah, so my first two songs were two that you don't even like. No, so I got off to a weird start for you. Yeah.
But, well, to say that we were only half the same, and those ones we are the same on are the absolute obvious ones.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We're very different here.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because, yeah, I mean, the Big Muddy. Yeah. That's not my cup of tea right there, so
yeah. And again, I was trying to make it what I thought would be a good album.
Yeah, yeah, you know, no, I just selfishly just made it what I think would be what I would want to listen to the most.
That's where we both start, for sure.
Yeah, so I guess right now we're going to do the same thing, even though everybody, half these songs everybody had already heard the first minute of, but now we'll hear them in your order. This is what album would have been, Lucky Touch. And we'll close out the episode with that. And then, like Brian said, let us know on Facebook or send me an email, rockandorrollpodcast@gmail.com. And let us know which album you like more, Human Town or Lucky Touch. And we'll see who wins. We'll be right back.
Walk together, baby, come what may. There come the twilight, should we lose our way? If as we're walking, a hand should slip free, I'll wait for you. Should I fall behind, wait for me.
I bought a bourgeois house in the Hollywood Hills with a trunk load of $100,000 bills. Man came by to hook up my cable TV. We settled in for the night, my baby and me. We switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on.
If you haven't heard them, dig back into his earlier episodes and find the other Getting Bossy episodes, because there's some good talk on there too.
Oh yeah, we did Nebraska. That was the first one we did, and then we did The River Revisited, we called it, where we looked at all the songs from the era of The River and just made one really awesome album out of them, right? Is that what we did?
That's right. And, yeah. And again, we were quite different. We were quite different on those ones as well.
Oh, I remember what we did. We took we said he released That Bind. Say he released that album, which was so great. It would have been such a great album. And then he could have made another album. Yeah.
Yeah, of everything left. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And you could check us out on Lee McCormick's Bruce Springsteen podcast, Two Tramps Like Us, where we eviscerated Bruce's second album.
We were definitely on the same page on that one. Poor Lee. He just loves that album. We just shit all over it. Well, here's the thing is, okay, we both love Bruce Springsteen records. So does he. We love lots of artists. And you always hear people say, like, I'm a true fan, so I like it all, or whatever. I guess that's more of the Facebook bullshit you'd hear. But people, that kind of attitude of, you know, if I love a band, I have to love all of it. Like, I completely, wholeheartedly disagree. I think if you love an artist, you have to give it a chance. But you don't have to love it. You know, like, I don't care. I have lots of artists I love, and nobody, and I have songs I hate by all of them, and albums I hate by all of them, probably.
Yeah.
Hate may be too strong a word, but, you know, they're not just releasing gold after, you know, every time. And so when it comes to Bruce's second record, yeah, I think that from era one, from his first record to Born in USA, or you could debate whether where Tunnel of Love fits, but that is by far the weakest by a landslide. And after we finished that conversation, I went and popped on the first record just to kind of like, I'm not crazy, right? And the first record kicks ass. I love that record.
Yeah.
It's so much better. Like the hooks, the melodies, they're so much better, the songs, than the second one. The second one, I think he just had the sophomore jinx. He just crapped it out.
I have barely ever even listened to the second one. And I've listened to the first one a lot. I know all those songs very well, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. They're just great. And, you know, these records, I'm really glad we did this. And again, this whole started because I went to a record store in Vancouver and looked on the shelf and, oh my God, there's Human Touch and Lucky Town here. I've, you know, these are so hard to find. And they were $20 each. And I'm just like, yep, scoop, they're mint. Whoever bought them probably listened to them once and didn't like them. And as I was buying, like the guy at the counter was just like, kind of went wide-eyed. And he's just like, I just put those out like an hour ago. you know, I had no idea what they were worth. And I was just like, well, I don't know. But I think you priced them fair. And I'm thinking, dude, you could have easily doubled it and somebody would have snapped these up because they're so hard to find. And walked out. And I was all giddy because I'm like, $40, I got them both mint. And I emailed you. You're like the first person I emailed. And I'm like, BJ, dude, I just got Human Touch and Lucky Town on vinyl mints. And he's like, bah, that's garbage. I sold mine. And that's what led to this episode of like, you know, for our reactions to be so different. And yes, I know they're not the best, but I was so happy to find them. And you just totally dismissed them. I was like, is there an album there? And I think for both of us, of this experience of going through and really forcing ourselves to sit down and listen to them a few times and really analyze them, I think we both came out feeling a little higher than we did before in terms of how they rate.
Yeah,
even if they're
that's
not
true.
Classics. They're
that's
not
true.
Classics.
Yeah. That is, well, yeah, like I said on Lee's episode that The Wild, The Innocent was my least favorite until Human Touch. Well, now I have to amend that and say no. I even like Human Touch more.
Yeah.
I have to admit that. And I have to say that now that I've revisited it. Okay, well, thanks so much, Brian, for joining me for these two episodes, Human Town and Lucky Touch.
Always a pleasure. I can always love talking about Bruce with you.
Yeah, and I am really glad that we did this and that I revisited these records. And I have to admit, they're better than I thought. And some of the songs are really, really good. So.
Yeah, I agree. This is rather eye-opening. You know, I have them on vinyl, and I play them every now and then, but I don't actually – they're not records I would sit and listen to. They'd be records I'd be, you know, puttering around the house, and they'd have it be on in the background. But being forced to really sit and listen hard, yeah, they definitely went up a notch in my book.
Human Touch is about a man falling from grace in various ways, and that Lucky Town is a record full of images of redemption and so forth.
Well, I would say, I mean, if you're trying to cut the records up in that fashion, there's a lot of kind of groping around on Human Touch, and there's less on Lucky Town. There's a little more of finding your place, you know, and I think refinding yourself, you know, it's about sort of getting back in touch with your own humanity and the good things that you feel about yourself, and also being, there's less fear on that record. There's a world of love there, you know, there's a world of fear too. And it's standing right in front of you, you know. And very often that fear feels a lot realer, certainly more urgent, you know, than the feeling of love. And the night my little boy my son was born, I probably got, it was as close to what I guess I would say was just, it was just a feeling of a real pure sort of unconditional love, and with all the walls down, you know, all of a sudden what was happening was so immense that it just stomped all the fear away for a little while. And I remember I was really overwhelmed with the, you know, with the feeling of the whole thing. And then but I also understood why, why you're so frightened. You know, it's like, you know, when that world of love comes rushing in, that world of fear comes in with it. And you know, whether you're afraid you're gonna, hey, you got something you can lose. You know, to open yourself up to one thing is to face the other thing. You have to embrace both things, you know. And then you embrace those things, and you're just around the corner from, you know.
I'll be back.